Jim Packard in for Larry Mueller today on the Ideas Network. Glad to have you with us as we talk now about protecting bats in Wisconsin. Dave Riddell is a bat ecologist with the Wisconsin DNR. He routinely monitors colonies of nearly 150,000 bats. It seems like a great number. Is that a great number to you?
Yes, it's one of our largest hibernation sites pretty much in the Midwest. It's certainly our largest in Wisconsin. And you know, in terms of bats for Wisconsin, we've got some of the largest numbers in our hibernacula.
One of the largest colonies of bats found near the Horican Marsh at the Needham Mine State Natural Area, that must be the one you're referring to.
Correct.
And what do you see when you go into the mine?
Well, we typically don't go in it's until... you know, absolutely necessary. It's been abandoned since 1917, and all the support structures are rotted out. It's actually a pretty dangerous mine to go into. Do most of our work on the outside, counting bats as they come out of the exits, and look at what's going on in the landscape.
Mm-hmm. And extrapolate from there.
Right.
If you'd like to join this conversation about bats in Wisconsin, the number is 1-800-642-1234. Our email address is talk@wpr.org. I read there were approximately 1,100 bat species on the planet, and it makes up a significant percentage of the world's mammal species. I didn't know that that they were that prevalent.
Yes, one of the most diverse mammal species on the planet. Pretty much name a food group and they eat it, you know, anywhere from nectar feeders and fruit eaters, you know, seed dispersers, and most of the, I think about 80% of the bats will consume primarily insects.
Mm-hmm. So there is some great benefit to them.
Yes, they are quite a voracious appetite that moves things and moves things along.
Mm-hmm. What do you say to people who say, I just, you know, hate bats. I can't stand the thought of a bat in my hair or something like that.
Right. Well, most of the things we know or have been told are, you know, old wives' tales that don't necessarily hold water. I'd say don't lose sight of the nighttime creatures that we rarely see. They play an important role. For instance, bats, you know, female bats in the summer can eat up to their body weight in insects per night. You know, anywhere from 600 to 1,000 mosquito-sized insects per hour. And if you look at my weight and extrapolate that, that would be about 800 quarter-pound cheeseburgers for me per night.
That you would have to consume the same energy they do for their size.
Right.
We have lines being filled right now. There is one line open if you'd like to get a question or an answer at 1-800-642-1234. And again, our email address is talk@wpr.org. As we talk about protecting bats in Wisconsin with Dave Riddell, a bat ecologist with the Wisconsin DNR, do you have the territory of the entire state, or where pretty much are you concentrating your efforts?
Yes, we're trying to create a statewide bat program that addresses the statewide level rather than these individual projects here and there that are disconnected. And, you know, we'll work with our other state partners in the Midwest as well.
There's been much in the newspapers, in the media over the last couple of years involving something called white nose syndrome. What do you understand white nose syndrome to be, and what can you say about it?
Well, first of all, white nose syndrome, clinical signs are a white fungus evident on the nose, wing membranes and ears, sometimes tails. There's some wing damage and depleted body fat before the winter's over. There's also some abnormal signs, behavior, bats flying outside in the daylight, midwinter, and dead bats near the cave entrances and out on the landscape.
Yes.
Well, probably the best way to summarize it, there's a nice paragraph here if you don't mind me summarizing it. As a consensus statement drafted and approved by a group of leading scientists who met at the Wisconsin WNS Science Strategy meeting in Austin recently.
Okay.
And here's how it's put. White nose syndrome, or WNS for short, is a devastating disease of hibernating bats that has caused the most precipitous decline in North American wildlife in recorded history. Since it was first discovered in 2006, WNS has infected six species of insect-eating bats in the northeastern and southern U.S., causing declines approaching 100% in populations. Estimated losses have exceeded 1 million bats over the past 3 years, and if the spread of WNS is not slowed or halted, further losses could lead to the extinction of entire species and more than quadruple those that are federally listed as endangered in the U.S. Such losses alone are expected to have unprecedented consequences on ecosystem health throughout North America, with unknown economic consequences. Most bat species in North America feed on night-flying insects, of which many are pests of forest, agriculture, and garden crops, or pose risk to human health. Number of insects consumed annually by 1 million bats is quite staggering, equivalent to about 700,000 tons of insects were eaten this year with the loss of the million bats. 700,000 tons is quite a bit. Emphasizing the extraordinary value of these bats to the normal function of both terrestrial and aquatic ecosystems. And finally, establishment of a national comprehensive research program is urgently needed to identify underlying mechanism causing WNS and to develop sound management recommendations.
Have we seen evidence of white nose syndrome here in Wisconsin?
Nope. Thankfully, we haven't seen it here yet. The spread line is in Pennsylvania, West Virginia, Virginia. That's as far west as it's gotten so far. We expect it to continue moving. Hopefully, we'll have some time to respond before it reaches Wisconsin.
What do you think a response could be?
Well, that's the tough one. Mm-hmm. Very tough, because there's a lot of uncertainty involved in this. The rapid nature of it means we don't have a lot of time to address some of the questions that, some of the basic bat questions we haven't had addressed in the past, just because they're difficult to study.
Mm-hmm.
Comparing bats to birds, a lot of bird basic questions have been answered. We're still scrambling to get some basic info, especially here in Wisconsin.
All right, let's take a couple of phone calls before we go to the news. We'll start off with Phyllis in Ripon. And Phyllis, what's on your mind today?
We've noticed some bat droppings in our screen porch lately, and we had one of these mouse deflectors where it sends out some sort of high-pitched sonic whatever wave out, and we thought, well, we would try it on the bats, and we've set it up in our screen porch. I'm wondering if this is going to be workable. Will the bat be offended by this high-pitched wave that we can't hear? But would that help?
Well, on your screen porch this time of year is typical. Bats are starting to move around, head towards their hibernation sites, so maybe stopping on the way. And as far as I know, the sonic devices do not work. Maybe get them to move a few meters off to a different corner of your porch.
Okay.
If they're not getting into your house, I would expect that bat will not be sticking around much longer.
Okay. Well, thank you.
All right. Thank you very much for the call. We appreciate hearing from you, Phyllis. And let's go to Nancy next in Brighton. Hello, Nancy. Yes, go ahead.
I have a question regarding bat houses. I've been wanting to put some bat houses on my property, and I'm having a real tough time finding out a place to buy them. Can you help me out? And also, I know I've heard that they're supposed to be facing a certain southwest, east. Do you have any guidelines on that?
Sure. I would say take a careful look at whatever bat house you're purchasing. A lot of the ones we find in the garden stores around here are too small to create a temperature gradient that the maternity colonies that you're trying to attract will benefit from. So, there's a couple of places online I would look for something that is at least 18 inches wide by 2 feet tall, and they can come anywhere from a single chamber to five chambers. As far as placement, you're going to want to get it up high, 10 feet or so. On the side of a house or on a pole is best. Do not put them on a tree. Basically, it's too shaded. And one of the things I like to recommend is on a 4x4 post, put it up. In terms of sunlight direction, you can put one facing east, one facing west to let them choose from morning sun versus afternoon sun. You can face them south if you have a single one. Basically want to get that dark-colored bat house in the sun so it heats up. That's what the females are looking for to raise the young. Does that help, Nancy?
Nancy, thank you very much for the call. We appreciate hearing from you. And we'll go to Barbara next in Fort Atkinson. Hello, Barbara. What can we do for you today?
Hi. I'm looking for some tips. I love bats because of all the wonderful things that they do, and I think they're such curious and beautiful little critters, but I'm scared to death of them. We haven't seen any in my neighborhood for probably the last 10 years, and all of a sudden they're back. But every time I go outside, they seem to like me. They come swooping over my head, and I get scared to death, and I run back in my house. So
Barbara, let me interrupt because we're going to have to go to the news in a minute. What do you say to the fears that she has?
Well, you're probably afraid because it doesn't happen to you very often. I would say you don't have to worry about them landing on you or getting caught in your hair or any of that. Be thankful they're swooping around you. They're probably capturing insects right around your head. Lost my train of thought there.
So in talking about her fears and combating those fears.
Right.
Why don't you ponder that thought, because we're going to have to go to the news, and we'll come back and we'll start up again after the news with an answer for Barbara. And again, our guest is Dave Riddell, who's a bat ecologist with the Wisconsin DNR. Dave and his wife, Lisa Wilson, have also established an endowment to provide for the long-term protection of bats in Wisconsin, and we'll get into that as well after a look at the latest news here on the Ideas Network. Hi, I'm Jim Packard, in for Larry Mueller on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Happy to have you along with us today as we talked about protecting bats in Wisconsin with Dave Riddell, who is a bat ecologist with the Wisconsin DNR. And again, Dave, thank you very much for coming by today.
No problem.
Talking about the threats to bats. There are approximately 1,100 bat species on the planet, but there are just a few of those, seven commonly found in Wisconsin. Is that right?
Yeah, seven that we can find relatively easy, possibly two more. The federally endangered Indiana bat hasn't been verified here since the 50s, and possibly the evening bat in southern part of Wisconsin, but we've only had one record of that relatively recent.
Mm-hmm. We were talking with Barbara of Fort Atkinson before we broke for the latest news, and she expresses, a feeling that many people share, which is fear of bats. Do people have to be afraid?
Generally, no, there's nothing to fear. Usually it's the fear of the unknown. It's at night flying around. A lot of times creeps a lot of people out. There's usually one or two of those folks that come up on a field trip, and by the end of the night, they're fine with it. One of the fears that's probably in a lot of people's minds is bats and rabies. In the wild population, typically less than a half of 1% ever get it. And they are typically not aggressive and do not actively seek out to bite you. It's the ones that you should be concerned about are those behaving sick or abnormally on the ground. Sometimes they'll be flopping around, flying during the day. And I just stressed, you don't want to pick those up with your bare hands. That's almost always where the the bat-human contact occurs is picking up a sick bat.
Let's go to the phones and take some calls at 1-800-642-1234. Jan in Hayward has had an experience with a bat.
Hi. Yes. Hi, Jim and Dave. I had one of the unfortunate experiences of being bitten by a rabid bat last summer. It was in the middle of the day. I had taken my shoe off for maybe 30 minutes. It was outdoors. And I put my foot back in my shoe and felt just a little like I had a plastic fork in there. And I could kind of hear the rustling. So I put it in a plastic bag, and it was a bat, and it tested positive, so I was treated. So it crawled in my shoe because it was rabid, because it was sick?
Was it during the day?
It was during the day.
Yeah, I suspect it was out, it's being sick, it's going to go out and be in different places it not isn't normally. I'm sure your shoe looked like a great temporary roost for a bat out in the sunlight.
They wouldn't give me my shoe back, though.
Well, I know if someone stuck a foot in my little roost spot, I might get a little grumpy, too. But I'm glad everything worked out with you.
Yeah, it was fine. Is there any statistical significance associated with that half of 1%? Could I have a colony of rabid bats here?
Typically, the rabies doesn't spread rapidly through a colony, even though they're in dense clusters. That's how it can stay at such low numbers. So I doubt you have a colony of rabid bats. I would just again stress, don't pick up any bats off the ground. Leave them alone or call your local wildlife health center.
Good, thank you. I'll take my shoes too.
All right, Jan. Great, thanks.
Thank you very much for the call. We appreciate hearing from you. Let's go to Ron in Newburgh next. Hi, Ron.
Yes, good afternoon, Jim and Dave. A little different experience. A couple of years ago, we were backpacking out in Utah, and after supper, I went down a little water hole, and there was an old bat flying back and forth across the water, keeping the mosquitoes away from camp. And as I bent down, I guess I put my head right in his way, and he hit me smack on the head and never had a chance to put the brakes on. But they are so light in weight, you hardly even felt them for hitting you. And we both went our own ways. He kept flying around over the pond, and I got my water, and away we went. So the other thing, as far as observing bats, if I go out around here for a walk, 8:30 to 9:30, down a little gravel road with trees on both sides, it seems like a pretty good spot to see bats flying back and forth. What's the best place to find them?
Well, you just mentioned two great hot spots, over water as well as along tree-lined edges. Typically, you're 8:30 to 9:30, the bats are just coming out to forage, and oftentimes along tree lines, there are concentrations of insects. It protects from wind, and you'll see them flying along these old forest roads as well as up along park edges along forest. Depending on the species, some you want to go right to a water source, a pond, lake, river, stream. And a lot of the aquatic insects that come out are favorite food of the bats. So, depending on where you look and how long you look, you can find bats in some strange places. But the best place to look is where you already mentioned.
Where do they nest once, or roost for the day, once they come out of their hibernaculums?
Well, they head to their summer sites. Three of the bats migrate up from the south, and four or five of our cave bats emerge from the hibernation sites and will head towards anywhere they can raise their young in a summer maternity colony. Some species will spend their time in trees underneath loose bark, in woodpecker holes, or in hollow trees. Other bats, like the little brown and big brown bat, may find your attic or barn suitable. They're really looking for warm temperatures, and often these human structures up in the attics provide that for them.
Very good. Thank you.
All right, Ron. Thank you very much for your call. Is it possible to use greener energy like wind turbines without having a negative impact on our bat population in Wisconsin?
Well, I think it's certainly possible. That's one of the things we're working on now with a variety of partners. Nationally, there's a number of groups looking at this. There's a Bat and Wind Energy Cooperative, a variety of state, federal, and utility partners. We at the Wisconsin DNR have the Office of Energy leading that, but Bureau of Endangered Resources consults with them as well.
Mm-hmm.
We're working on a guidance document at the DNR to help with wind turbine development and with the unknown aspects that we're not sure of, that we can try and figure out how some of these interactions are occurring and how to minimize them. We'll hopefully address the study needs, siting considerations, monitoring needed, as well as mitigation options. So that that comes to, you know, how right now can we try and make them coexist on the landscape. One of the most promising items is something called curtailment. Basically, that is where during the fall, 6-week period when most of the fatalities occur, changing the cut-in speed for the turbines. Bats generally fly on low wind nights, and if changing the cut-in speed so it has to be a higher wind speed before they turn on is something that's been studied in Canada, Germany, and now more recently Pennsylvania, and it's proven successful. It's something we'd like to see studied because it might be the most effective and economic way of addressing this and provide an easier avenue for wind farm development in the state.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to Judy in Reedstown. And Judy, what's on your mind today?
Hello. We live in an old farmhouse, and several years ago we had bats in our attic. They didn't come into the house, so we figured we could coexist together. But an old farmhouse has cracks and little gaps in places. And what came into the house was a parasite that lives on, I think it's little brown bats. It's a soft tick. And it's not like the kind of tick you find out when you're out in the woods. It's a soft-bodied tick, and it's very slow and insignificant looking, and it's tan, and you hardly even realize that you maybe ought to squash it or look at it. But unfortunately, while its host stays upstairs, it comes downstairs looking for blood, and it found mine, and I got ehrlichiosis from it, and we eventually had to exclude the bats from our attic area because there were too many ticks coming downstairs in search of a blood meal. And ehrlichiosis is it's like Lyme's disease. It's no fun to have. So I wish sometimes when you're talking about bats, I know they're beneficial, but remind people that there is a parasite that is very dangerous and it can get anywhere.
Well, thank you for bringing that up. I think, unfortunately, what you've experienced is quite rare. Bats do have a variety of parasites that they occasionally get. They will groom them off, and if it ever gets too numerous, they will often change roosts to try to minimize that. So I'm not sure how long the bats were there and why they didn't change roost if they got high numbers, but I've actually never heard of that type of incident, so I'm sorry to hear it, but hopefully that's quite rare.
Well, the etiology was definitely well proven. I put my hand on the biting insect as he was biting me, and I realized that it was a similar reaction to others. It's a dramatic reaction when you get bitten by one.
Okay.
I don't know how rare that can be in these old houses, but...
Did the parasite crawl on you, or did you pick it up?
I saw the parasite on the wall once and didn't think of it, anything of it. Then later I realized that I thought it might have eight legs, and I picked it up and I realized it was a tick, and that's when I went to the worker found out it was a soft tick and that it was a parasite of bats. And I knew we had bats, so I started to try to exclude them from my attic area. But I got bitten by one as I was falling asleep, and I'd been bitten several times before and just didn't realize it. And I put my hand down, and there was the little eight-legged soft tick, and there was just no question that the woodwork came back with ehrlichiosis.
So you're in Reedstown. Anecdotal, I've been handling bats for quite some time now, and I occasionally notice some parasites on them, but have never actually been bitten by any of them. They usually stay to the bat. They're specific to the bat and generally aren't out looking for humans. So, like I said again, I hope that's something that doesn't happen to you again or anyone else.
Judy, thank you very much for the call, and let's go to Tom in Stoddard next. Hi, Tom.
Hi. I have two items. The first one is if you want to move a bat, say it's out in the grass, and you want to get it out of your area and to a safe place, you can use a stick and engage him in that, and he'll crawl up on that a little bit, and you can just take him to wherever he can be safe and release him there. The other thing I wanted to mention is I had heard several years ago that if a bat gets in your house, you can just ignore them because they know how they got in and they will go back out. And I've done this on two occasions. I just shut my bedroom door so I don't have a bat flying over my head when I'm sleeping, and they're gone. Thank you.
Yes, thanks, Tom. Moving bats in a yard, you know, if you really need to get it out of there and you can't have it there to find its own way out, I would, you know, the other option is rather than a stick, you could put it in a Tupperware container, slide something underneath it so you're not touching it, and just move it over to a tree and let it crawl there. Chances are by nighttime it'll fly away. As far as bats in your house, what you mentioned is certainly a great way to get let them find their way out by closing them off in that room, opening a window. You don't have the time for that, you can wait till it lands, and again, put a container over the top of it, slide something underneath, and then let it out from there. That's usually the best way to do it, rather than the sound deterrents or whatnot. Usually, when you get bats in your house, it's the month of August, early September, and shouldn't be a regular occurrence.
I know that you and your wife, Lisa Wilson, have established an endowment to provide for long-term protection of bats in Wisconsin, which, you know, we certainly salute the effort you're putting in here. How did you set this up to provide this endowment?
Well, Natural Resources Foundation of Wisconsin is a nonprofit organization that just recently created an avenue to support your favorite natural area. You can focus on a taxa group or certain critters. And being a nonprofit, they were able to set up these different endowments, and it looked like a great way to benefit bats in Wisconsin for the long term. So we approached them and came up with a Wisconsin Bat Conservation Fund that would do just that. Looking at why we did it, it was really no comprehensive bat program for the state. Like I mentioned before, a lot of projects here and there, and a lot of disconnect.
Mm-hmm.
And really wanted to ensure that there was, in perpetuity, a long-term plan for bats, and that there was always funding available to do such things.
If people want to join in, how do they do that?
Well, if they've got online access, probably the easiest way is to go to the Natural Resources Foundation website. That is wisconservation.org or wisconservation.org.
Mm-hmm.
And there's an online donation that they can donate right online, tax deductible, or they can contact NRF directly and, you know, mail in any checks. Just put the word bats on it, and they'll know
where it goes.
Right.
Dave Riddell is our guest. Let's go to the phones again to Rick in La Crosse. Hi, Rick.
Hi. I used to be terribly afraid of bats, and then I wised up, and they're all over in La Crosse. They're the little brown ones. I guess they must be riparian because we're by the Mississippi. We're right on the Mississippi, but I learned that they, besides eating mosquitoes, and they also are pollinators. And what I was wondering was if you could speak to the very worrying prospect that we'll lose our pollinators because of the abandoned colony syndrome, and then you have the white nose thing going on with the bats. What are scientists doing to address this? And I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
Rick, thanks very much.
All right, thanks, Rick. La Crosse is a great spot for bats, as you mentioned, along the Mississippi River. Got a lot of great water resources there, good roosting spots. So I've heard that's a great place to find bats. We had a barn out there with some big brown bats in it, and I would agree that's a great spot for bats in the state of Wisconsin. As far as pollinators go, we don't have any pollinators in the state of Wisconsin. There's basically a few in the southwest part of the United States, maybe some in further tips of Florida as well. So we don't have any pollinators. All of our bats are primarily insect eaters, occasionally a spider here and there. Yes, it is. With the white nose syndrome has been compared to the colony collapse disorder in bees. That's certainly another alarming issue that's been coming out in the past few years. It's the bees you're talking about there for the pollination.
All right, let's go to Janice in Rock County next. Hello, Janice.
Hello.
Yes, go ahead.
I have a follow-up question to the earlier caller who wanted to know about proper bat housing and siting of bat houses.
Okay.
I purchased several years ago from a bat conservancy organization in another state a rather large two-chamber bat house, which has been mounted about 20 feet above ground on a south-facing metal agricultural building. And no bats have thus far seen fit to establish themselves there. And I'm wondering if you have, other than, say, putting a tall post up at some distance from the building, if you might have some additional suggestions for me.
Sure. Well, Janice, thanks for attempting to put up a bat house. That's always good to help attract bats to the area. It sounds like you've got a large enough bat house, and I assume it's painted dark for our Wisconsin weather, help attract the sun. 20 feet above ground might put it in a windy spot. Oftentimes we like to see it not on top of a hill, but a little more calm wind area. The other thing, putting up a bat house is not like attracting birds, where you put up a birdhouse and that spring you've got wrens in it. For whatever reason, sometimes bats move in the next day. Other times it takes 2-3 years. I would say if you've had it up for 2 years, I would start thinking about moving it. You could put it on the side of that metal shed, or I guess the one question I didn't ask was how close to a water source you are. For little brown bats, we typically want to be within a half mile of water for them to drink. And big brown bats can go a little further, maybe a mile or so. So that's the only other recommendations I would have, is keep it out of the high wind and you really want to be near a water source.
And good luck to you, Janice. I'm sorry we can't get to more calls, but we have run out of time. Been talking with Dave Riddell, a bat ecologist with the Wisconsin DNR, and he and his wife, Lisa, have established an endowment, and that's done through the Natural Resources Foundation of Wisconsin, Wisconsin Bat Conservation Fund. And again, thanks, Dave, for being with us today.
Well, thanks. Thanks for having me, Jim.
If someone would like a CD of the program, it's available through the radio store at 1-800-747-7444, and you're asking for program 826G. Tomorrow, fall photography with Jack Socha of Spring Grove, Minnesota. That's at 11, and at 11:45, prescription eyewear with Jim LaLuzerne here on the Ideas Network.